Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
30 seconds.
And now the act you've all been waiting for.
Now back to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
I am the smartest man alive.
Call Johnny now at 844-5600.
Funny name for a guy.
20 years of sports coverage. This is Nashville's sports original.
Stop what you're doing. And listen,
WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
Here's Johnny.
And welcome to hour number three. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson broadcasting out of the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, the coldest team in town, now offering great wages and benefits for drivers to join their winning team. If you would like more information, you can go to the website, gogginkold.com. We'll be with you tonight until 7. And as always at this time, we love visiting with our next guest, Doug Segrist. He joins us on Wednesdays. And then on Saturdays with our Countdown to Kickoff tailgate show, formerly with the Nashville Banner. He's now a co-host on the TV show The Zone on ABC 3340 in Birmingham. In addition, he's a contributor to the Montgomery Advertiser as well. Doug, we appreciate you, sir. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ballpark. Good to be here.
You know, I came up with this unusual stat, and I was just thinking about Alabama and Tennessee, and I remember back in the days when Bear Bryant was head coach talking about this matchup. You know, before a season, he wasn't talking about Auburn, and sometimes he referred to it as the Cow College, and then they, of course, experienced the Bama punt game. But I go back to Tennessee. He always measured his team and how successful he felt like his team was going to be by what transpired in the third week of October. But the interesting thing about this, you know, until Nick Saban, Alabama was ranked only number one twice when they would be meeting up with Tennessee. It happened in 79 and it happened in 1980. That's it. The other seven times have all occurred starting in 2009 when Alabama has taken the field, and the same thing will happen on Saturday night taking on the Tennessee Vols.
Well, we kind of look at, you know, today where everybody's got SEC fatigue, but you go back in the 60s and 70s, and a lot of times Southern schools, not just SEC, but out in the Southwest Conference, Arkansas is a great example at times, were kind of overlooked. There seemed to be a bias towards other parts of the country. And you know, the same thing kind of the Pac-12 claims now.
I'll say rightfully so, there should be a bias, because at the time, you know, when most of these schools we're talking about would not allow African-American players to play on their teams.
No doubt. And in 66, you know, most people thought Alabama was as good as anybody in the country, but Notre Dame, Michigan State tied. Notre Dame got the number one vote at the end of the year. And most people thought that was not only that, you know, that they thought Notre Dame was the better team, but it was kind of a pushback against segregation in the South.
It was also a year coming off two straight national titles for Alabama. They go unbeaten.
Alabama fatigue as well. You're right.
They go unbeaten. It's like, you know, we're good. We're going to show some love elsewhere.
But the days where the SEC kind of dominated from start to finish really didn't start until the 90s under Spurrier. And you go back all the great teams in the 70s and 80s, a lot of them were underrated for at least much of the season until the bowl games.
We look at the other thing that really stood out for me with Bama and Tennessee, you know, starting in 2009. So you look at the last five meetings in Tuscaloosa. I mean, here's Alabama, 12 straight wins over Tennessee. They're you know, 13 out of the last 14. But interestingly enough, when Tennessee has played Alabama tough, it's happened in Tuscaloosa. 2009, I mean, here's Tennessee, a field goal away from upsetting the number one team in the country. And then we go back to 2015 in Tuscaloosa. Here's Alabama, had already lost once. They were still a top 10 team, but they'd already had lost to Ole Miss earlier. And here we are, a 19-14 game here late in the fourth quarter, Josh Dobbs and Tennessee with the opportunity. Now, will we be talking about a scenario like that on Saturday night? Nobody expects it. But then again, nobody expected it in 2009, and nobody expected it in 2015 either.
Right. You look at Alabama playing at home. It is a Taj Mahal. It's just a beautiful place to play football. However, the fans are used to winning. And if things aren't going right, the fans tend to sit on their hands at times, unless it's a big night game. It's LSU. It's Auburn. It should be the case with Tennessee. But, you know, the 2009 game just had this strange feeling. You always felt like Alabama was going to pull it out. Then all of a sudden, Tennessee scoring. And they're going for the tying field goal. And, you know, it just kind of caught everybody unaware. But if you look at Alabama's history, not just under Saban, but before, go back to Stallings, go back to Bryant. They've always been, in some ways, a more lethal team on the road.
What do you feel like Tennessee has to do? You know, I was throwing this out earlier, and you don't want to assume you're getting a loss, but all indications, that's what we're probably going to be looking at when the end of this game ticks off as far as those final seconds. I go back to the fact that what lies ahead for Tennessee after this, you know, South Carolina starts a five-game stretch. You do get a bye week after the first three games, but South Carolina, the very next opponent, if you're Tennessee, to me, that is the game you have to win. Because if you don't want to put yourself in a position where you have to win four straight games against UAB, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt if you want to get to bowl eligibility. So you look at this scenario with Saturday night, you don't want a bad loss to, if it is one, you don't want that to all of a sudden cause you to have issues the very next week. I mean, we look at Alabama's scoring over the last 3 years, 49 points in 2016, 45 2 years ago, 58 last year, and here's Tennessee during that same stretch, a combined 38.
I think the first thing you've got to do is try to slow the game down. And again, you mentioned South Carolina. Go back to South Carolina game films. You know, they were very methodical against Alabama. They took underneath passes. They used the running game, with the passing game, and they were able to drive the ball down the field, and more importantly, keep Alabama off. They didn't have a lot of big plays, although they busted a couple, but their best offense was keeping Alabama off the field. And listen, Alabama, everybody's trying to take away deep threat because they got four guys that can burn you vertically, but what is happening is they're throwing these little slants, and then they're breaking tackles and going 60 yards, so you got to be able to tackle. You want to kind of force them. You almost give them the run. If they're going to run the ball, you know, back off and let them run and try to limit it to 4 or 5 yards because it's these short pass plays that are just killing people.
What are your concerns with the Alabama defense? For me, I'm not there yet with regards to watching them moving forward because I look at over the last 2 weeks. I mean, we're still talking about a team that's fourth in the SEC in scoring defense. And when you score like they do as far as an offense, you know, that doesn't hurt them that much right now. But the big reason why we're talking about that is because of the number of points that Ole Miss and Texas A&M, they were able to put on the scoreboard the past 2 weeks. Well, what was the common denominator? The fact that Kellen Mond could certainly do some damage with his legs. And and as far as Ole Miss is concerned, I mean, we're talking about the leading rusher in John Rhys Plumlee. A true freshman, the leading rusher in the SEC. He's averaging over 117 yards per game as a quarterback. That's his specialty. He runs the ball. And so moving forward, looking at the schedule the rest of the way for Alabama, you know, those qualities in a quarterback, I don't think the Crimson Tide will see the rest of the way in the regular season.
You may be right. They'll certainly see it in the playoffs. But go back again to the South Carolina game. Ryan Helinski is not a runner, and he had a great day just with these short, accurate passes. So I think that's kind of a problem, too. Listen, Alabama's secondary, you know, we're talking about how much the defense has struggled at times. And keep in mind, they're kind of struggling in the second half when Alabama's up 3, 4, 5 scores, and they start giving up points. But they're giving up points, again, with mostly first-teamers. So that's a concern. But their secondary is very underrated. They may have two of the top three cornerbacks in the country. The problem is they're susceptible to the run, particularly up the middle. They are susceptible to RPOs, and they will give you, you know, short passes if that's what you're willing to concede. and they'll let you kind of grind it out if you want to. Now, what's gotten better is the pass rush, particularly with Anthony Jennings and Terrell Lewis. Terrell Lewis is finally healthy again. That really, I think they had 5 sacks against Texas A&M. That's part of the defensive package. They really haven't had that year, so it's starting to come on, and that makes them a little more dangerous. But Alabama fans are concerned about this defense because it's not what you come to expect from this program.
I look at LSU this week. They take on Mississippi State. Mississippi State coming off certainly a loss that they weren't anticipating. They were favored by 6.5 to 7 points on Saturday to Tennessee. And so now they're in a situation hosting LSU. All of a sudden, the seat has certainly gotten hot there for Joe Moorhead with Mississippi State. You know, here they are, and you're trying to figure out, can they get 3 more wins the rest of the way now that they're 3-3? I'm not sure that 5-7, especially for a team that, you know, before the season started, we talked about Mississippi State with the talent. It seemed like a team very capable of being a lowly ranked top 25 team, like ranked 21st to 25, somewhere in that position. You know, you can give them the loss to Auburn, no excuse losing to Kansas State, and realistically, no excuse to losing to Tennessee on Saturday either.
Well, and they didn't just lose to Auburn, they got blown out. You know, I think looking before at the start of the season, we not only looked at talent, we looked at the experience. They're one of the most experienced teams in the SEC. But I think these suspensions have really depleted depth, and we still don't know the full story on who's missing what games, but they've been wholesale suspensions. And I think that's really left them with a lot more inexperience than expected and less depth than anybody anticipated. And I think that's really left this program reeling. I think that's a big part of it. I don't think it's just a matter of them taking a step back. I think that's kind of an underreported story.
Could you see a scenario where all of a sudden Joe Moorhead figuring out this isn't really working out for me, and all of a sudden if somebody starts dangling some carrots ahead of him, he may run before...
he's been mentioned at Rutgers.
That's where I was going.
Why would you take the absolute worst job in the Big Ten? Well, because you're from that area, you know the recruiting pipelines, you know that the state of New Jersey actually produces a lot of football players, but Rutgers can't get them interested. But now you're a guy who's got I don't know if I should say national, but at least a reasonable reputation. You've been down the SEC. You had success at Penn State. Before that, you were at Fordham. Now you've got a guy who might be able to keep those players in, so that horrible, horrific job suddenly looks a little more compelling. Now, I'm not saying he's interested, but obviously there are people at Rutgers who are interested in him, and that may be a good safety hatch if he doesn't feel like he's a good fit at MSU.
You left off one really key statement there. I was expecting you to hit it, but you never did. But you were danced around it. You know, the biggest one too. How about leaving before I get fired?
Well, I don't think they'll fire him after 1 year.
No. Well, no, he's in his second year now. And here's the thing: next year, I'm not talking about this year. I don't think they would fire him this year at 5-7. Next year, you know, he would be in that position. And that's why he may go, I'd rather start that new clock again, new 5-year clock.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then would Rutgers be willing to pay for his buyout? That's another factor. But apparently they're willing to spend money. And, you know, it's an ugly job. But to somebody who is from that area, it might have some unbridled potential. And listen, Greg Schiano, you know, had a top 20 team there, you know, before he went to the NFL. They were a program built on rugged defense. They locked down defense, but they also could score points on you. You know, they had a great receiver, Britt. They had a good quarterback, and they were pretty explosive. You know, they were not in the Big Ten at that time, but they were certainly trending up.
Well, no, remember, I came down to the very end where, you know, in the regular season, wasn't it Rutgers flirting with, along with which other team at the top there? It could have been Rutgers playing for a national championship, if I remember correctly.
I thought they faded out a little earlier.
It was somewhere last decade, somewhere where they were flirting near
the
top.
I think it was the same 07? Year. That, yeah, South Florida was so good.
Right. So you had like, because you look at the top 10 back then, you're going, who are these guys? You know, because it's like, none of it made sense that year. And yeah, Rutgers faded at the end and end up going 8-5, but they were certainly very much in the thick of things there. As you mentioned, South Florida was too. Boston College was also, that was one of those years that Boston College was even in the mix, and West Virginia as well.
And what people really miss, though, when they think of Rutgers, they don't realize how much good talent is in that area. Not the state of New York, but the state of New Jersey. And, you know, you look at the Alabama roster over the years. They've gotten a lot of great players out of there. And Penn State has. So the talent to build a foundation is there.
All right, so help me figure out Vanderbilt. You know, I go back to July. I look at, and you know, we know what the defense was going to be. We didn't expect the defense to be good. My problems is I didn't expect the offense to be this bad.
Well, you look at the quarterback position. They lost a really good quarterback, and you kind of feel like somebody can step in. And that just hadn't happened. It had to happen on the roster. It hadn't happened with transfer. And if you look around the SEC, I mean, there are schools down to the third-string quarterback. They're still succeeding. But this current crop of elite quarterbacks in the SEC is about as good as it gets. You know, I'm not sure if we in the SEC really appreciate, you know, besides Tua, you know, just how good Jake Fromm or Joe Burrow is. I mean, there are just some really good quarterbacks. You know, Auburn fans, a little frustrated right now with Bo Nix, but come back to me in 3 years and let's talk about what Bo Nix has accomplished. You know, it's just across the board, there's just really good quarterback play, and when you don't have it, it's a huge drop-off. Now, that still doesn't explain what happened last week.
By the way, it was 2006 with Rutgers. They were 9-0 going into the third week of November, and they lose on the road. They were ranked 7th in the country, and they lose to Cincinnati. So I go back, if a team has done that before, just like everybody says, well, Nebraska will never be good again on the national landscape. If you've had those kind of seasons before, the right scenarios means that you can still achieve it again, as long as it's been in recent history. I mean, if you're going back 80 or 90 years, maybe it's a different story.
Well, and they get to, and you go back 150 years, they were.
I mean, remember, to put this in proper perspective, just remember Vanderbilt had the premier football stadium in the southern part of the U.S., the premier football stadium in the SEC. That's what Vanderbilt had almost 100 years ago.
Now, you go back to McGugan and Red Sanders, and Vanderbilt was the dominant power in the South. But the Rutgers was doing this when they were basically in a cast off of a group of five league. Now they're in the Big Ten. They've got more money. They have updated the stadium. You know, it's a sprawling campus. But again, on the surface, it just looks like the worst job in America. And I think to somebody who knows the ins and outs, it actually has some potential, more so than maybe some of the Western Division schools in the Big Ten.
We look at some of the other things that we're still trying to figure out as far as LSU. They passed a major test against Florida. I was waiting to see, with Joe Burrow in this offense, what's going to happen with Florida, Mississippi State, Auburn, and Alabama. That four-game stretch, get the bye week before you take on the Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa on the 9th. Well, first and foremost, certainly passed the test against Florida's defense. I think the toughest one of that matchup will be the Auburn defense. Am I totally sold on what LSU is doing? I mean, to this point, absolutely. But remember, one of the big things that we talk about teams like this that have not been there before, until you start going in that grind where all of a sudden now the bullseye is on your back and you're having to show up. And I still go back to that impressive stat with Alabama, 135 out of the last 138 football weeks, starting with the first week of 2008. Every game had national championship implications for the Crimson Tide. The only three that didn't, after they lost to LSU in November of 2010. Every other week, we're talking about 135 out of 138 weeks. They've been, everybody's been trying to bag the elephant, per se, and be the talk of the college football world. That just shows you how tough it is. Now, here's LSU dancing that dance right now. And so far, so good through the first six games. Once again, so far, so good through the first six games. There's still six more regular season games. And you may be in a position where there's an SEC title game. And then if you're in that situation, you're probably then thinking about not one, but maybe two playoff games. There's still a lot of football to be played yet, and we're still have a few more questions and that needed answered by this LSU team.
Yeah, and I think really the next answer comes against Auburn because of that Auburn defense. But I also think let's see how LSU approaches this from a game plan, because if you go for the quick strike and the aggressive offense against Auburn, it may backfire because they've got the kind of defense that can put you in a hole. Now, at the same time, you can kind of go to your old nature, your old MO, and play a little more conservatively with the idea that Auburn's not going to be able to keep up with. So I think that's going to be a good mental test and a good strategic test as well. Let's see how LSU approaches it, because I think one of the strengths of this team is that basically Coach O has gotten out of the way of his coordinators, particularly on offense. And this is just a total new look team, but we've seen LSU in years past have some pretty good offenses, and they go into that Alabama game in particular, and they get really buttoned down and conservative, and they never really break out of that, and it affects them the rest of the year.
Well, it's going to be a day game when they take on Auburn, and I thought this was the case back in July, August, and I'm not backing off of it. I think Auburn goes in there to Baton Rouge and wins that game. The part that you just brought up is a key there, because when teams like to move the ball fast, I mean, they've already, and this was even last week, they'd already had three more touchdowns this year than last year as far as under 3 minutes as far as their scoring drives, 26 going into that Florida game, for example. I bring it up because if all of a sudden you run in, and they haven't had that issue yet because they haven't encountered a defense like Auburn's defense, and they won't against Mississippi State either. So what happens when all of a sudden now the other team is dictating what you can get accomplished as far as an offense? How many teams all of a sudden facing that situation, especially for the first time, all of a sudden get impatient, make mistakes, because they get impatient because they're not being able to get accomplished what they grew accustomed to being able to get it done prior to that contest?
Well, and this is an Auburn program that's already played three really huge games. They've won two of them. The one they didn't win, they really got outplayed, yet it was a one-score game until near the end. So this opportunity has been tested, and they kind of know their personality. I also think, as bad as they looked against Florida, I think part of that was just the schedule taking its toll. Up to that point, nobody had played as many big games as Auburn had. I think they were a little worn out. Now, my concern with them going to Baton Rouge, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, the running game is going to be very different, and I want to see this weekend when they go to Arkansas what Auburn can do to compensate for the loss of Bobby Whitlow, because he was their bell cow. Even in games that they were expected to win, like Kent State and Tulane, he was getting 18, 20 carries, and he was carrying the ball early on to kind of set the tone. Well, they've got to find a replacement, and there is concern that there may not be a three-down back behind him to really fill the gap. So how is Gus Malzahn going to approach this? He doesn't like committees, but he's going to have a patchwork run again.
This year is unique because, we kind of grew accustomed to having just one bye week. This year we have two bye weeks in the schedule.
Yes.
And so because of it, I think this year, entirely different way of playing these games out compared to years past, depending on when teams have their bye weeks, how it sets up. That's why when I looked at Auburn in that stretch before they got their bye week, when I knew the last three games of that six-game stretch to begin the year with Texas A&M on the road, home against Mississippi State, and then on the road to Gainesville, I just felt like that last game was going to be the one that would, and that's why back in July, I had that and still have the schedule from SEC Media Days where I've got my W's and L's, still have a big L there for Auburn against Florida. And the same thing can be said with LSU, with Florida, then on the road to Mississippi State, and then they have to come back to Auburn. I think when you start thinking and breaking the schedule down with these three-game stretches or four-game stretches or whatever the case may be, it's just so tough mentally to be able to, stay sharp all, 4 weeks, especially if the team you're facing has a mental break where they're not in that same position as far as being challenged like that, where they have a little bit of chance to get a breather, per se.
I totally agree with the scheduling. We look at the overall schedule, but not enough at the stretches. And, you know, keep this in mind, too. Auburn won't even be home until, what is it, November 2nd against Ole Miss. You
right.
can talk about a month away. It's a mental strain, and it's also a physical strain, and that combination is not good. And that's why I think if they went out, and I did not expect them to win out, but they've already started better than I expected them to. They're in the running for everything. I mean, it's all on the table for them. But I think if nothing else, Auburn's going to have a major factor in who gets to Atlanta.
One more question before I let you go. Back in July, I was asked, do you take Alabama, Georgia, or the field as far as in the SEC title game? Took the field, and it was because not of Alabama, it was because of Missouri. And knowing the potential landfalls for Georgia and Florida, but see, I thought that the problem would be for Georgia or Florida would be because of the teams in the West, knowing that Missouri gets Ole Miss and Arkansas. I wasn't necessarily – now, last year against Bentley, I had Georgia losing in Week 2 in South Carolina. I didn't have South Carolina being able to go into Athens and knock off Georgia this past Saturday.
No, I didn't either. I still think it's Georgia's to lose, but, we've talked about Missouri all the way along, and now you've got this Florida team, which is capable of really doing a lot of damage as well. So it's basically a three-team race. And it's far. Now, I did take Alabama, Georgia. I did not take the field, and I still feel those are my two best guesses. But, you're right. Not only is Georgia vulnerable, but Alabama's vulnerable because, if nothing else, LSU and maybe Auburn.
You know what the best part about all this is? We're only halfway through the regular season. We're only halfway through the regular season. I mean, but not only what the SEC is going, I mean, it's boring as far as the ACC, but it's fun as far as the SEC, fun as far as the Big Ten, and that's what's going to make it exciting as far as the college football landscape. And
don't forget Pac-12 and Big 12. I mean, they're maybe the Big 12's not wide open, but the Pac-12's just wide open. I mean,
it's wide open.
Can beat anybody in that league.
It's wide open, but with Oregon losing to Auburn, you're still playing for the fifth spot as far as the college football playoff.
Right.
Although I said I had Oregon circled. I said watch out for Oregon, even after losing to Auburn. I said they're going to run the table, and at least they will be in that conversation if somebody slips up.
Yeah, and I think they just have to keep on and wait for and just hope somebody else slips along the way. But if you've got undefeateds from three of the power conferences, you're probably going to be out of luck.
Hey, can anybody from the ACC play college football? Here's the thing. You are allowed to be ranked if you're not named Clemson as far as the ACC. How pathetic is that, that you have one Sun Belt team ranked in the top 25, one Mountain West team ranked in the top 25, one independent ranked in the top 25? You have two teams from the American Athletic Conference ranked in the top 25, and yet one team from the ACC ranked in this week's AP poll.
Well, and if you look at the computer rankings and stuff, the Mountain West and the American Athletic are both ranked ahead of the ACC, and that's just something you don't see with Power 5 leagues, not in football. You might see it in basketball, but not in football.
Doug, thank you as always. If you're not doing so already, follow Doug on Twitter at DSegrist. He's a co-host on Birmingham's The Zone on ABC 3340 every Sunday night. Also a contributor to the Montgomery Advertiser. And when he has some other extra spare time, he's an incredible writer too. Catch out his work and go ahead and plug your novel. I mean, we're still waiting for the second one, but go ahead and plug the one you've got out now.
A Storm Came Up is a coming-of-age story set in the 60s. It's got great reviews. It's available at online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com.
See, I know when mine comes out, I know, Johnny did such a great job over the years plugging my work. I'm going to have to do the same thing. So that's
all. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'm there.
That's not the way I operate, but you know that. So I admire your work.
I'll be there for you, man.
I appreciate your friendship, too. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Saturday.
Thanks, Bob Parker.
Thank you again. Doug Segrist joining us once again. If you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
I want you to listen to what is a very important message from my friends at Shield Law Group and my buddy Bill Kalutis. Your credit report is really important. What if you've been the victim of identity theft, or you have an item on your credit that doesn't even belong to you, or you've been turned down for a mortgage, credit card, car loan, rental housing, job, or insurance? Okay, you get the picture. The credit report is vital. You need it to be the very best it can be. And for a lot of us, we don't even know what our score is. So that's why I bring on ShieldLawGroup.com, my friend Bill Kalutis, and his phone number, 615-742-8020. You know what? It might be the most important phone call you make all day. ShieldLawGroup.com and my friend Bill Kalutis.
Were you scammed into signing a timeshare contract? And did you miss the part that said you have to pay for your great idea? Not only for the rest of your life, but when you're not here anymore, you get to pass this turkey onto your family for them to pay for the rest of their lives. Thanks, Dad. Don't burden your family down the road, and don't be stuck with expensive timeshare payments forever. Get out of your bad idea timeshare contract guaranteed or pay nothing. Call Resort Release today and learn for free how their timeshare exit team can help you legally exit your timeshare contract. They've helped thousands of people, and they're A-plus rated with a BBB. So if you feel scammed, get mad, and get out of your expensive timeshare contract right now, guaranteed. Call N-O-W.
800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. 800-898-0816. That's 800-898-0816.
Hey, what you reading?
It's called The Ledger. There's a great column on the Titans.
So it's a sports publication?
No, not just sports. Like, see here, there's a great cover story on why Middle Tennessee's real estate market is so hot. The Ledger has stories written by some of Nashville's best, most experienced journalists. And you can get all the information on the Mid-State's fast-growing restaurant scene. There's profiles of community leaders and data that helps generate leads for my business.
And sports?
Yes, including UT coverage from Knoxville.
Expensive?
Is free expensive?
Free, huh?
Yeah, grab you one at hundreds of locations and tnledger.com. It's The Ledger. Pick one up today.
Congratulations to Tim Corbin and the 2019 Vanderbilt Commodores.
Vanderbilt, for the second time in school history, wins the national championship. And I believe you have just seen the greatest team in Vanderbilt baseball history.
The Vanderbilt Commodores.
We're glad we can celebrate among all of you, the Vanderbilt fans, the Vanderbilt community, Nashville.
Congratulations from your home for Vanderbilt baseball.
I think everybody loves having you guys being our flagship station. It means a lot to us.
Nashville Sports Radio. Every weekday afternoon, it's the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Jay Henson. 615-844-5600 if you'd like to be a part of the show. Don't forget, I'd like to invite you to check out our Countdown to Kickoff Tailgate Show coming up this Saturday and every Saturday during the college football season from 10 a.m. to noon. College football insights not only from the SEC, Top 25, and then starting in the second hour, we'll be keeping you updated as far as a scoreboard update on all those 11 a.m. kickoffs as well, but great interviews as we preview all the big games on the landscape. Big thanks to our visitors making it possible for us to bring the show to you each and every Saturday, including the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, Penn Station East Coast Subs, along with real estate agent Richard Courtney with Frederick and Clark Realty, Inns Bank, Strike and Spare Family Entertainment, Casa of Nashville, along with the Klein Preston Law Group and Lanham's AC Service. That's this Saturday and every Saturday during the college football season from 10 a.m. to noon right here on Nashville Sports Radio. This was a bizarre story, never a good thing. A University of Alabama freshman is accused of calling in a bomb threat at LSU's Tiger Stadium during the LSU-Florida game Saturday night. And this is never a good thing, too, when you see your three names. If you like, my middle name is Mark. No, I know it's not ballpark. It's Mark. But I never use Mark, never have, probably never will. But if you ever hear Johnny Mark Franks, that means I've done something terribly wrong or I passed away. Either one, not a good thing from the way I look at it. But so Connor Bruce Kroll, 19, he's out of Virginia. He was arrested and jailed Sunday as a quote-unquote fugitive from justice, and he faces unspecified charges in Baton Rouge. Now, according to the police affidavit, he basically told police he called in a bomb threat during the Tigers' victory over Florida because a friend was on the verge of losing a large bet. Authorities didn't immediately provide further detail about the nature of the threat or whether or not he was in a position to carry it out. Yeah. Now my guess is, you know, this is one, if it's proved to be true, my guess is that not only are you facing some criminal charges here and some, got to pay the piper, but my guess is that you'll be, if you're going to school, you'll be going to school somewhere else.
Yeah, more like a state prison.
According to the spokesperson for Alabama, Chris Brown, he said that pranks and threats can have serious ramifications and require an appropriate response. He said the school is cooperating with authorities, but can't provide details on the individual's arrest.
That's not a prank when you do that.
No, that's not a prank. That's nothing.
I don't care what anybody says. That's not a prank.
I go back. I think what year was it? 2007 or 8? I think 2008, where there was some students at one of the Alabama games throwing urine on opposing team's fans. And it's like, you know, I was hearing some of the folks that called in on my show, and they were talking about the fact that, oh, they shouldn't be allowed in the state in the rest of the season. And I go, timeout. The rest of the season? How about they never should be allowed? I don't care. I mean, I don't care if they become the richest graduates in the University of Alabama history. They should never, ever, ever be allowed to come and to attend a game at Bryant-Denny Stadium.
How mad can you have to be to throw urine?
And they were in the game, too. It wasn't like they were getting blown out. I mean, I think it was a game that was decided in overtime or something, if I remember correctly. But the bottom line is, it's like, how stupid? That's just so dumb. To be in that position to do something like that, we look at where's your gauge as far as Vanderbilt, as far as they taking on Missouri. I mean, here's a Missouri team doing everything they need to, clicking on all cylinders with Kelly Bryant and company after that opening week loss to Wyoming, and even then, it's like if you break down the game, you know, two plays, and instead of losing by six in that particular game. You're talking about a Missouri team that would have won by 14 or 17 points.
Right.
Because one play, Kelly Bryant turned it over where immediately Wyoming was in the red zone. And then the other one, they're getting ready to score. They're in the shadows of the goal line, and it's a return fumble by the running back all the way for a touchdown the other way. 14-point turnaround right there as far as that's concerned. So ever since then, you know, a blowout win over West Virginia, blowout win over Southeast Missouri State, beat South Carolina. Now, how impressive is this now, beating South Carolina by 20, blew out Troy. Nice win against Ole Miss this past week. And the score is 38-27, not as close as that final score indicates, because Missouri was up big at the end of the third quarter.
Right.
And Ole Miss made it respectable in the end by, with what they did in the fourth quarter. But Missouri was up big in that particular game. From a Vanderbilt standpoint, I mean, here's a team, obviously, you know, the fewest number of points they've scored all year was 31. That was back in week one. You know, since then, you know, we're talking about a team that can score a lot of points. And what has been an issue with Vanderbilt? Well, there's been more than one. But first and foremost, it starts with the defense. Can the defense even do anything to slow down Missouri's offense? We saw what they couldn't do against LSU. Kelly Bryant, if he's on track, if he's doing everything that he has shown us his capabilities this year, there's a reason why Missouri is the only team unbeaten in conference play in the SEC East coming into Nashville on Saturday afternoon.
Right. I mean, I think Kelly Bryant, I mean, him and that receiving core and that offense is going to have an absolute field day with Vandy's defense. I mean, they're a 21-point favorite. I might have to take the over on that one.
How many folks do you think will be in the stadium?
They'll say 20, but I'm going to say, well, there'll be a lot of Missouri fans, so I'm going to say 15.
Hey, by the way, thumbs up. You know, Missouri, one of the big complaints about, you know, they having to move some games, and a lot of neutral sites just because they can't get interest there in Columbia. Winning certainly has helped the Missouri Tigers. I mean, I go back to last week, 62,000.
Wow.
And before that, they had 50,000 for Troy, 52,000 for South Carolina, 56,000 for SEMO, and 51,000 for West Virginia. Respectable numbers.
They had more for SEMO than they did Troy?
Maybe it was homecoming.
It must have been.
That'd be my guess. It was probably homecoming.
Yeah, true.
So that's the, and then we get Tennessee Vols. I still throw it out there. Not expected to be in the game in 2009, not expected to be in the game in 2015, yet there they are. One-score game, and you know, if you score a field goal in 2009, you beat the number one team in the country. And then we go back to 4 years ago, a team in Alabama had already lost earlier that year at home against Ole Miss, and they're in that position where it's only 19-14. Josh Dobbs and Tennessee with the opportunity, and not a lot of expectations out of either one of those teams in those particular seasons against Alabama, yet there they were in the fourth quarter. Can they have success as far as on offense against that Alabama defense? I mean, these are the kind of questions. Brian Maurer, you would think that you'd give him an extra week to get healthy for South Carolina. South Carolina is a winnable game, yes. And you're going to need that game if you're talking about having to win four out of your last five to get to bowl eligibility.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't look at it that way, and I'm sure Jeremy Pruitt doesn't look at it that way. And so there's a lot to be watching and monitoring with this game. And plus, it's kicking off after 8 Central time. I mean, so this is, you don't know how the players are going to respond. This is, you know, it's one thing to know if you're kicking off at 11, and if you've done that, or then 2:30, now you're, now young players are resilient, and so you adjust, and I get all that. But you don't know how the fans are going to react in a situation like that either. I mean, last time I remember 8 o'clock kickoff, I mean, I go back to one of the original games as far as college football on television. It was Ole Miss and Alabama, and they kicked off, and it was after 8 o'clock at Legion Field when Archie Manning was playing for Ole Miss. And, and I was the nice young age of...
Is that the year that he got off the field crying?
That might have been, yeah. Actually, now that you mention it, and I think I was all of 6 years old, and I didn't make it to the second half. I fell asleep.
You were done.
Now we were watching it at some restaurant in downtown Birmingham, and it was one of those nice huge booths made for 8, and there were only like 4 or 5 in there. Oh yeah, I was good. I was in Naptown.
You're a cloud nine right there.
Oh yeah. All right, if you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. Coming up on the other side, we'll also take a look now that the NFL Week 7 kicks off. We know that Ryan Tannehill will be the quarterback for the Titans as they take on the Chargers coming up on Sunday. We'll look at the start of Week 7 with Kansas City. They're on the road, which has been favorable for them. Their two losses this year for Kansas City has been at home. They'll be on the road tomorrow taking on Denver, and that will kick off Week 7 in the NFL. We'll talk about that and some of the other games in the landscape as well. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Hello to my buddy and former 1977 BGA classmate, James Warren. He's now the owner of Sir Speedy in Berry Hill. James, let's talk a little mailing services.
We do mailing for all kinds of folks, George. And I will say, if a business needs to boost sales or drive customer loyalty, they can talk to us. We'll have it covered. Our direct mail pros can get your company in front of the right people with our comprehensive direct mail and mailing services. Basically, all you have to do is share your goals with us, and we do the rest. Get the ball rolling and send your next direct mail project to us at rates cheaper than you can mail things.
Give me the particulars.
So our email address is print@SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. You can find us online at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com or give us a call at 615-832-9511. We've got you covered.
Looking for future leaders we can trust and believe in? Look no further than the high school student athletes right here in Tennessee. High school sports teach young people how to be effective leaders. It begins by making their grades and being on time for practice. It includes learning to listen, following directions, accepting responsibility, being a good role model. And it's about respect. for officials, opponents, the rules, and each other. The result? It transcends sports. It gives us hope for the future. High school sports. There's so much more than just a game. This message presented by the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association and the Tennessee Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
This is Jim Renitz, CEO of Innsbank. For over 17 years, Innsbank has been proudly helping Middle Tennessee businesses, people we consider friends. Innsbank is a true local bank built by and for Nashville business leaders, a place where clients' best interests come first, a place where you have access to local decision makers, and a place where you receive the personalized service you deserve. It's because we are a different kind of bank that knows what makes sense for you and your business. Come visit us at our Green Hills or Brentwood office or online at InnsbankTN.com. Your bank, your partner. Get to know Innsbank, where genuine matters.
Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio WNSR Skyscan weather forecast. As we move through the nighttime hours on your Wednesday, you can expect mostly clear skies with the low around 41 degrees. For your daytime hours on your Thursday, mostly sunny, high 63, and for Thursday night, clear with the low 40. Utilizing the resources of the Weatherbug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's Jimmy O'Neill.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now, 615-844-5600.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Geigen Cole Hall Studios. Don't forget, start your morning off with the Bill King Show tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, followed by Greg Pogue and the Big Joe Show from 9 to 11. Then Jim Rome comes your way from 11 to 2, and then right before us, the George Plaster Show from 2 to 4. We'll be back with you again tomorrow at 4. Don't forget another edition of Prednik Nation also tomorrow morning from 5 to 6. And then we'll have it again tomorrow night from 6 to 7 right here with, of course, Crazy Charlie Sonje and his guests getting you ready and as the Preds back on the ice again, fresh off the win last night, back on the ice taking on Arizona coming up tomorrow night. I was just looking at where we are with, you know, here's two teams this week. As far as with the Tennessee Titans hosting the Los Angeles Chargers, it's week 7. So everybody's played either 5 games or 6 games. Mostly, almost everybody's played 6, except for a handful. But so 5 or 6, right, going into this matchup on Sunday. And I was, you know, already it's maybe too early, but when you start thinking about quarterback change and your quote-unquote franchise quarterback getting benched, you start thinking, that means the Titans will probably be in the position to want to draft a quarterback in 2020. So, there's 32 teams. There's five teams with no wins or just one win. So, five. Then you add to the mix, so two wins. Ten teams have two wins. So, 15 of your 32 teams, which includes the Titans, by the way, in that 15 of the 32 teams have two wins or fewer. Mm. Almost half the league. So that's what you're looking at.
That's
so
sad.
And at this point, you go, okay, is there just parts of me? Because, you know, one of the top quarterbacks that will be out there for the draft next year, Justin Herbert from Oregon.
Right.
And is it just me? The first thing I'm thinking about, Oregon quarterback. I don't know. What else is behind door number three? You know, I don't mean to be offensive to Marcus Mariota or anything, but just immediately, you know, like
red flag kind of pops up.
Red flags come popping up. And I'm obviously curious to see how Joe Burrow continues to play. I would say Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, his big knock will be the same knock that you get with a Drew Brees. And I thought Drew Brees did pretty good. Russell Wilson did pretty good not being quote-unquote 6 feet tall.
Right.
Yeah, they're you know, Russell Wilson, by the way, who is not 6 feet tall either. Russell Wilson right now, leader in the clubhouse, if you were handing out the MVP award today, he would be the winner. That's kind of season he's having. And, oh, by the way, he's not 6 foot. He's not 6'3", 240. He's under 6 feet tall.
Yeah, he's about every bit 5'10".
Drew Brees, who, by the way, got the nice paper little certificate.
Remember just that, like laminated.
Just like if you have perfect attendance in school for your first 30 days or whatever, got the nice little certificate when he became the all-time passing leader in NFL history as far as most yards, and he's not 6 feet tall either. But Tua Tagovailoa, you think that Miami, they'll be going that direction, right? I don't think they're sold on. By the way, they've named Ryan Fitzpatrick. He'll be their quarterback coming up on
Fitz
Sunday.
Fitzmagic's back?
He'll be the quarterback starting for the Dolphins, who the winless. You've got Dolphins winless. You've got the Cincinnati Bengals, who have their version of Marcus Mariota with Andy Dalton. They're 0-6. So those are your two winless teams this year. And so that's it from that standpoint. And then as far as the one-loss teams, Atlanta with Matt Ryan, you don't expect them to stay that way. You would expect them to be able to accumulate a few more wins.
Right.
You got Washington that, you know, just drafted their quote-unquote franchise quarterback, and Dwayne Haskins. They're 1-5. And then you got the Jets, and they've got their franchise quarterback in Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he's not, you know, being, you know, missing games with mono, he's doing just fine, as we saw with the win against Dallas this past week.
Right.
And oh, by the way, we had a great Monday night game this past Monday. If you take away the officiating and the terrible calls there with that Detroit-Green Bay game, if Sam Darnold plays like he did against the Cowboys with the Patriots coming up on Monday night, should be back-to-back weeks of solid football games.
I like that. I mean, I really thought, you know, everybody gives Booger McFarland a lot of grief, but I thought he did a better job this week than normal.
How do you not, if you're in the position and you get that one call, you got to tell the official, I did not have my hand was here, and you have to sell them, yeah, and let them know, because what happened? You get called for the same thing, and he didn't do it that time.
Didn't do it either. Yeah, and it's clearly on the replay. If you watch it, his hand is at his neck. When I say neck, I'm talking about the collar. He's not around the neck, around the face mask. He's right underneath the chest pad going up, and that's what's making that guy's head go up. But for some reason, you know, he didn't say anything. He didn't argue with it. At that point, I would have been furious, especially the first time.
Hey, by the way, huge game. I know it's only week 7, but, you know, we mentioned the Atlanta Falcons. We expect them to win a few more games at 1-5. They're hosting the L.A. Rams. Remember, this was the Rams team that represented the NFC last year in the playoffs, right?
Right.
Here's a Rams team right now in third place, only a half game from being in last place. But, you know, loss-wise, they're tied with Arizona at the bottom of the NFC West. San Francisco, 5-0. Seattle, 5-1. And you got a Rams team that has to go into Atlanta Sunday afternoon. Is it too early to say must win for the Rams in this situation?
No, because that's definitely what they need. And I think with Atlanta, the way they've been playing, I feel like that's a really good opportunity for them to get things right before they go up against Seattle.
How about this? The Bills host...
Or not Seattle, but San Francisco.
The Bills host the Miami Dolphins, right, on Sunday. Just throwing this out there, what happens if the Bills win and the Patriots lose to the Jets on Monday night? You would have the Bills tie for first place there with the Patriots.
how ironic.
Look, the game is being played. The Jets always, for whatever, even when they're bad, they still play the Patriots tough. I mean, with Sam Darnold, this team was supposed to compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah.
They've got a nice defense. With Sam Darnold and Le'Veon Bell, who got his first rushing TD of the year this past Sunday, now that Darnold is back, you know, just there may be those questions coming up on Tuesday like we got back in 2014. Remember after Kansas City, I think, beat the Patriots in week 4 and the Patriots were 2-2, and it's like the discussions, is it time to bench Tom Brady or something?
Oh, man.
That was 5 years ago, by the way.
Yeah, really.
And I think that was also a Patriots team that went on to,
Super
Bowl.
Yeah,
they won the
Super
Bowl. That's right. So that's how we start with Kansas City against Denver. We end with the Jets and Patriots. A couple other games to pay attention to as well. A nice matchup with the Saints when the job Teddy Bridgewater keeps on doing for the Saints. 5-1.
Yeah.
Talking about a must win. You know, the Bears are in that situation. They're hosting the Saints. They're 3-2. But they're in that same situation mainly because of who they're going up against in that division.
Right.
Every team in the NFC North, 500 are better. Detroit 2-2-1, Chicago 3-2, Minnesota 4-2, and the Packers leading the way with the 5-1 record. So almost every week, especially in a division like that, because we compare that to, say, the NFC East, where not one single team is above 500. The Eagles and Dallas, both 3-3. The Giants, 2 games under 500. And then the Washington Redskins bringing up the rear with their 1-5 mark.
It's crazy to think about that NFC North. I mean, that's probably the toughest division right now.
Well, absolutely. When you look at it from a record standpoint and then looking at what you're getting from these teams on the field as well. Big thanks to our visitors to the show today. Anthony Herron joining us, college football analyst, not only with the Pac-12 Network, but also NBC Sports as well. John Glennon, he covers the Titans and the Predators with The Athletic here in Nashville. Kayla Anderson, award-winning sports reporter, sports anchor with News 2, WKRN-TV here in Nashville. And then finally, Doug Segrist, formerly with the Nashville Banner, now a co-host on the TV show The Zone in Birmingham on ABC 3340, talking SEC. Don't forget, Bill King Show tomorrow morning, 6 to 9, followed by Greg Pogue and the Big Joe Show from 9 to 11. And right before us, from 2 to 4, the George Plaster Show. For Jay Henson, Johnny Ballpark Franks, have a great night, everybody, and make it count.